Big show for you here today. I recap Monday Night Football off the top. An electric Jordan Mason performance. How high are we ranking him if Christian McCaffrey misses time? Then we throw it to Dalton Del Don and the People's Panic Meter. Drake London, what's our concern level there? Puka Nacua going to miss time. What happens to the rest of the Rams offense without their star young receiver? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, September 10th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Doing a little post-Monday night solo wrap-up here. Great game to talk about. We have a great show for you here today, which I think the show is probably a little bit better than the actual football game, although there's some big takeaways. Dalton Del Don's going to join me later to talk through the People's Panic Meter. Banger of a week one edition for the People's Panic Meter, so definitely stay tuned for the rest of the show for that. But for now, we have to talk about the game that Dalton is actually at, probably leaving right now if he didn't get out of there early, because his Niners controlled this contest. Niners 32, Jets 19. Some pretty critical takeaways to go with on the Niners here. Of course, by now, if you're a Christian McCaffrey drafter, you have him on your fantasy team, which I have him on a couple of my fantasy teams. You know, I know my mom's got him on her fantasy team, so I was texting, you know, her immediately. She's on tennis court. She wasn't able to sub out Christian McCaffrey. I didn't have Christian McCaffrey alternatives in my roster. So I'm sure a lot of you had the same situation. We got pretty banged on this one. It is what it is. I will say, if you have Christian McCaffrey on your fantasy team, it sounds like, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, he might miss next week too. So if you weren't able to prepare a viable alternative for this week, which totally understandable, we got this news at the very last minute that McCaffrey was not going to play in this game. They were not going to risk his calf Achilles sort of situation that he's dealing with. Not much you can do about that, but you can at least be prepared for it next week. I would say, if you have McCaffrey and you're looking for a silver lining, and you know, maybe this is me putting myself in the coping corner right away here in week one, because I'm trying to cope with what just happened with the McCaffrey thing, where I took a few close losses tonight because of it. I will say, at least they're being responsible with his rest injury situation here. I've felt it was always a little strange that the 49ers were so aggressive to just pile this guy up with touches and snaps, you know, absurd usage rates throughout his time with this team. Because, yeah, we know he is an unfair advantage at the backfield. He's a true matchup nightmare. He's a coverage dictator. He's one of the most unique players at the position, if not the most unique player at the position, certainly right now, and really maybe of the last 5 to 10 years at the running back position. All that being said, we know that while that's all true, Kyle Shanahan can feature a good running game with almost anybody, and that perfectly transitions us to tonight's game, because the story coming out of this one has to be Jordan Mason, 28 carries, 147 yards, and a touchdown. He also chipped in with a catch for 5 yards as well. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman pointed out that this was the most carries that Jordan Mason has handled in a game since high school. Pretty unbelievable stuff. If you've been following this team throughout the course of the summer, it was being made apparent, and you know, my rankings reflected this, most rankings reflected this, it was being made apparent that Jordan Mason was overtaking Eli Mitchell for the running back two job on this team. That was something, a storyline that was going through all offseason. And frankly, I've always liked Jordan Mason. You know, when you see him in the preseason, very limited reps in the regular season, I think he runs with a lot of aggression, he runs with a lot of power, and shoot, he certainly played that way on Monday night against the New York Jets. You know, not a pushover defense, but boy, did they get pushed over all night. You know, obviously Jordan Mason, as long as he is out there as the starting back, he's a top 12 running back in fantasy football, bare minimum. He's a guy you're breaking ties in favor of starting. Oh, you've got some wide receiver you really like that you usually start in your flex. Don't care. You got two other established backs. That's nice. They better be really, really damn good to be playing Jordan Mason over those guys going forward. You know, maybe you didn't have you weren't able to play him tonight, right? You know, I have one roster where he's on my bench. I didn't play him because the starting spots are all locked up. I totally get that. But at this point, if CMC is not out there and Jordan Mason is starting for the 49ers, he's starting for your fantasy teams. I almost don't really care who else you have. I will say, too, just on this last note on the 49ers, like, that offensive line performance, super encouraging. Not just from a run game perspective where they were moving people. Dominic Puni, their rookie guard, that was a find. He looked incredible in this game. He was aggressive. He was powerful. He was moving people in the run game. He looked fundamentally sound from my eye on the broadcast as well. That's a pretty big revelation for them. Just in general, yeah, having Trent Williams back is nice. He left the game for a little bit to get an IV. Not a big deal. Having him back is obviously super important. It's a critical development. But the rest of that line looked really good, too. That was one position, or, you know, one kind of position group that you could poke a hole in on this 49ers offensive roster. Not so at this point. That looked like a unit of strength on Monday Night Football, blowing holes open for Jordan Mason. And then Mason, again, fundamentally sound runner as well. Ran with power, aggression, good vision, followed his blocks, got some things extra afterwards. That's exactly what you want to see. Not too much to say about the rest of the 49ers offense. Brandon Ayuk definitely left some plays on the field. That was frustrating, obviously. You know, we knew he was going to be on a limited snap count. I haven't seen the final snap data, but just watching the game, you saw way more Chris Conley than you probably would expect. Juwan Jennings leads the team in receiving. Juwan Jennings is a good player. He's going to be involved in the offense regardless. But, you know, you saw some Ronnie Bell out there. You saw some Chris Conley, like I mentioned. That's probably not going to be a thing going forward. Obviously, the drop in the end zone, that's a pass Brandon Ayuk catches 10 times out of 10. And he let some plays slip through his fingers tonight that, you know, probably not a big deal. Frustrating again tonight if you ended up playing him in fantasy, but not a big deal going forward. I think the longer the 49ers go here, the better they will look, which is pretty scary because they dominated this game, especially in the trenches where Brock Purdy had a he could have painted a damn picture back there. He had so much time against this Jets front that obviously is without Hassan Reddick. And if I'm Hassan Reddick, I mean, I don't feel great because I'm losing a lot of money right now at this point, but I'm also saying, hey, Jets, you know, get on the phone. Let's work this deal out because you might need me on defense. Let's talk about those Jets here really quickly before we toss it to the rest of the show. You know, a lot of what I think we could expect. Garrett Wilson leads this team with 11 targets. Alan Lazard, I mean, what a night for Alan Lazard, by the way. First target, drop. Ends up getting in the end zone twice. Once on a free play, which is, for lack of a better word, and I say this endearingly, vintage Aaron Rodgers bullshit. Where gets the free play because gets the defender to jump across the line of scrimmage. And of course, it's a 36-yard touchdown to Alan Lazard. He also got a garbage time touchdown from Tyrod Taylor, who came in at the end of the game in relief of Aaron Rodgers when the contest was out of sorts. You know, Rodgers, 8.0 yards per attempt, 61.9% completion rate. I thought he looked pretty good, especially early on in the game. You know, the functional mobility is just not going to be what it was certainly before the Achilles, and obviously just when he was younger in general, but I thought he played pretty well. I thought he drove the ball well down the field. Like, his arm talent is still readily apparent. I also love to see Garrett Wilson being moved around the formation. I saw a lot early on in the game where he's lining up in the slot off the line of scrimmage. You know, he's told me personally that is where he wants to play. He doesn't want to just be stuck out at X receiver running go routes and out routes and things like that. So that was encouraging here. And Breece Hall, you know, dominates this backfield in touches. 16 rush attempts. Nobody else has more than one. Braylon Allen chips in with an 8-yard carry at the very last few moments of the game. Breece Hall also catches 5 passes, 39 yards on 6 targets. He dropped passes. He lost a fumble. Not his best night either, but he still ends up giving you a great fantasy performance. I say all these like kind of silver lining things with the Jets because overall, look, they got outclassed by a better team. The Niners, for all of the offseason drama and nonsense and some of the, you know, the IU plays left on the field today and, you know, some moments were here or there. You could pick nits at this, that, and the other. They're one of the best teams in the NFL. I think they are still the class of the NFC. And the Jets are just not as good as them. But from a fantasy perspective, you got the usage you want from Garrett Wilson. You got the usage that you absolutely want from Breece Hall. Those two young stars check boxes there. And I thought Rodgers was about as good as you could want. So from all together on Monday Night Football, really the big surprise was Jordan Mason. That was the big story. Everything else kind of went as expected, which considering how last year, 365 days ago, when I came on this pod and did, you know, what was an emergency podcast segment on a Jets Monday night game, all things considered, pretty good result here for everybody involved to just get through this game cleanly and get a really excellent performance from Jordan Mason. Yeah, shout out again. One final shout out to the CMC Fantasy Football Managers. What a way to start your fantasy football journey this year. I'm sure you're majorly frustrated. If you manage to just be kind enough to stick around with the podcast, really appreciate it. Speaking of the rest of the podcast, let's throw it to the rest of the show. One last piece of context here, though. We do discuss Puka Nacua in the People's Panic Meter. This was before we found out he was going to be placed on IR. He is going to miss at least four games after a second injury on that same ligament in his knee. I mean, I said if he's not healthy in the show that he's a total panic. And hey, he's not healthy. So if you have Puka, you're totally panicking at this point. And then it'd be like that sometimes, man. Sometimes you draft a player in the first round, early second round, and he gets hurt and misses a bunch of time. Sorry, Puka managers, but that's going to be you this year. All right, on that note, let's turn to the rest of the show and Dalton Del Don and the People's Panic Meter coming out of week one. Joining me now is the one and only Dalton Del Don, bright and early on the West Coast, buddy. Dalton, how's your week one? What's going on, buddy?
Harmon, there's a lot to talk about in football, but before we get there, my daughter's first cross-country race was over the weekend. She's a sixth grader going against eighth graders. You see the ribbons behind me here. She'd had some success, but I kept the expectations low. I've been nervous all week, man. More nervous than the Niners Super Bowl I was at. More nervous than my Survivor picks this weekend. And facing these eighth graders, she won the race, Harmon. She finished first by 27 seconds. So I'm a proud dad. So you'll let me indulge just a minute here. Congratulations, Chloe, who won her her first race against eighth graders as a sixth grader now. And she's 22 for 22. She's won all 22 races she's done cross country. So doesn't get it from me, that's for sure. But congrats to Chloe. And let's talk some crazy NFL here now. But thanks for letting me talk a little bit about my daughter.
Oh, Chloe, what a beast. I mean, look, we typically try to avoid week one victory laps, you know, which is a great theme, by the way, for this particular show today. But we try to avoid week one victory laps because the game is not to get week one correct. The game is to get the season correct, let it all play out, you know, take in all the variables, et cetera, et cetera. This is one week one victory lap, Dalton Del Don, that I think not only should be taken, but I'm very happy that you took it here. So shout out to Chloe.
Andy Behrens has a star daughter, college athlete. So don't tell him because he can one-up me in this department. He does have that on me. So,
as I always say, if you want to talk about Andy behind his back, it's best to do it on the air because he will never listen to this. He will never have, and nobody tweet this at Andy Behrens or anything like that. He will never know that you just said that. This will be our little secret. See, I know that you listen to the pod back sometimes. Scott does too. So we can't talk. We would never talk about Scott behind his back. I would never talk about you behind your back, but we could talk about Andy behind his back on the show because he'll never listen to this. But all right. So that's a great week one victory lap. That's probably the only week one victory lap we're going to be taking on this show, Dalton Del Don. So again, shout out to you, shout out to Chloe, shout out to the whole Del Don family. But now it's time to get down to business here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the week one People's Panic Meter.
You say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening!
No, 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 no! Wait!
Everybody stay calm! Everybody stay calm!
What's the procedure?
So, Dalton, you're new on the show this year, and I'm sure that some people listening are new to this program. Here's how this show works. Every Monday, Sunday night, Monday morning, we take your submissions to the People's Panic Meter. I put out a post on X every single weekend, right after the Sunday night games end. We also have fantasy mailbag at yahoosports.com where you can submit the things that you are panicked about. We are, for transparency's sake, recording this episode a little bit earlier on Monday than we normally will. So we'll usually have more submissions, but honestly, it's best to be hyper-focused out of week one because there are some big, big panics that people have coming out of the NFL's opening weekend. This year, we're going to try to be a little bit more focused and give out some legit levels of panic on each submission this year. The levels are going to go as follow. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see that we have some pretty cool graphics this year to go along with it. For each submission, we're either going to say we have no panic, some panic, total panic, or, and your listeners will remember this from last year, you're going to go right to the coping corner. Okay. If there's no more panic, you can't panic about this anymore. This situation is what it is. You're going to go to the coping corner, which last year was famously renamed to Pollard's Playground because Tony Pollard was eventually just put in the coping corner. No more panic. It was what it was. I don't think, Dalton, we're going to have anyone in the coping corner this early. I think it would be unfair to put anyone in the coping corner after week one. But remember, it's always on the table. And I think that actually provides a perfect transition to our first email mailbag submission, because I will say, Dalton Del Don, I'm a little bit worried coming out of week one that at some point we're going to rename the coping corner London's Lane. A couple of submissions here from fantasymailbag at yahoosports.com. Alan Ellis's email subject line actually made me laugh. He said, the 1 millionth Drake London email. Do I get a prize? The actual one that we're going to throw up on the screen here, Nick Frame sends in Drake London. I was under the impression that a Rams offense tailored to feed Drake London was coming over to the Atlanta Falcons with Zach Robinson. Not sure what happened. Does the Steelers defense deserve most of the credit? I also, one more thing before I throw to you, Dalton, I want to note this tweet from @NR_Garrett, who responded to my 2024 week one panic meter post with my 2023 week one panic meter post, and noted that the vast majority of the submissions were about Drake London. I think the vast majority of the submissions this year are about Drake London. NR Garrett said that, you know, if you were panicking now, there's a 70% chance you're right. I think there were some that ended up being not worth panicking over in week one. But London's warning signs were legit last year. So I'll ask you this, Dalton Del Don. How are you feeling about Drake London, who is a consensus round 2-3 pick at worst in drafts this year after week one?
And the only question is it some panic or total panic here? Love the Drake, hate the Drake. So frustrating. It's not encouraging week one, no matter how you look at it. Drake London and Kyle Pitts combined for fewer targets and receiving yards than Ray-Ray McCloud. On one hand, it's Cousins' first game coming off Achilles surgery, a new system. Joey Porter Jr. Likely was on Drake London for a good portion of this. I know Porter left briefly, but he returned. So it's a tough, tough matchup. Maybe he's the best elite shadow corner in the league right now. But it's the targets. It's not like the yards or the touchdowns that I'm concerned, but just three targets. And Kirk Cousins' health is first and foremost here. If this that's why I'm actually leaning toward total panic. The Falcons were in pistol or shotgun 96% of their snaps. And totally predictable. Out of shotgun, they had zero designed runs. Ran the ball 81% out of the time out of pistol. Nate Tice pointed out they didn't run a single snap of play action the entire game. So clearly there's a lack of confidence in Kirk Cousins' health coming off that Achilles tear. So, yeah, I'm panicking about Drake London and Kyle Pitts, even though he was a rare tight end who scored. A horrible first week for guys. Drake London was going top 15. In some drafts, high stakes drafts, full PPR, top 15. And we all noted there's a lot of projection to this. Week one, three targets. That's not going to cut it.
Yeah. At different points in the offseason, I did pose the question on this show, like, are we getting out over our skis with Drake London going from, you know, a guy that was finishing outside the top 30 receivers into just a clear cut wide receiver one? At the same time, that's where I ended up ranking him. I got there with Drake London. I think his ability is commensurate with a player that can do that. And I was also very encouraged with like the idea of him after in Arthur Smith's offense just being a static X receiver lining up outside on the line of scrimmage on, you know, the vast, vast majority, over 80% in both of his first two seasons in games I charted for reception perception. Pure X receiver stuff. I thought the deployment of the player would be much, you know, better in this offense, you know, kind of off the line of scrimmage, slot, moving around pre-snap. Dalton, the thing that's irritating here is I went back and charted that game this morning on film, and that happened. Okay, like you see Drake London lining up inside. You see him off the line of scrimmage. He is not just a pure X receiver. He took more snaps off the line than on the line in this game. He gets a ton of targets, but a ton of opportunity as that over the middle player getting running full speed motion at the snap, runs way more routes going over the middle than breaking to the outside. Way more, you know, digs and posts than curl routes and working back to the quarterback, which is a lot of what we saw last year in the Falcons offense. So the deployment of the receiver, I couldn't feel better about that part of the equation, but it's everything else that's problematic here. And like I said on the recap show with Andy, let's acknowledge that this is a good defense. Like you said, Joey Porter Jr., TJ Watt was a game wrecker here. He's just a force unto himself. So maybe like once we get them against a different defense, although they play the Eagles and the Chiefs the next 2 weeks, they're going to have to score points in those games. Maybe it's just all better. The stuff that really bothers me is a lot of the things that you pointed out there. You know, they use the pistol on 55% of their plays, never use play action, as you mentioned, just took one snap under center. That's not the vision that you would imagine Kirk. Like, Kirk has never played in that offense. He's never taken more than 10 snaps out of pistol in any game during his NFL career, according to Next Gen Stats. Like, that was the offense that Kirk Cousins is supposed to be placed in. You know, we're sold like, oh, he's played in this system before. Kyle Shanahan, Kevin O'Connell, you know, Sean McVay. No, like, this is not the offense that Kirk has played in. And to my final thing here is that I've become so preseason matters pilled now, and maybe I'm overreacting to week one, but Dalton, are we not just insane now that these teams are with a brand new head coach, brand new quarterback, brand new offensive coordinator, that we're just, oh, no, we'll see in the regular season. How are we not expecting these teams to start slow? There was some sloppy ass football in week one, not just the Falcons, but that was particularly sloppy, some sloppy football in week one. And I have to imagine some of that has to do with the fact that these guys are just not doing anything in the exhibition games.
Yes, that's totally true. And going into new systems, historically, the first half of seasons, the offense's production is slower, and it gets better the more, you know, the more you get involved into that, more familiar you get with the offense. Other thing I want to point out here, Harmon, is I noted it in a pod with you previously. We're all encouraged about Zach Robinson's coaching tree coming to Atlanta, but they ran the second least amount of motion in the preseason. Maybe it was just the preseason. I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers of week one, but I'm glad to hear you say that they moved London all around, but we were just, you know, kind of chalking that up as a plus coaching. It's a wild card for me. It's unclear. But yeah, week one is a very discouraging box score for Drake London.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be an issue. There was so much motion, I think, in week one.
Okay,
so
good.
I think that was mostly preseason stuff. But again, don't you want to practice some of this, like put this stuff into place? Because that wasn't going on too much in the previous Falcon staff. So I'm with you that I'm at some panic. I don't think I can get to total panic because I did like the way London was deployed. There's nothing that you see on film that's, oh, he's a bad player. Anybody who's coming at you after week one and saying this is a Drake London issue is merely confirming their priors. They have not actually watched the film. I think London's still a good player. Bijan's still a good player. But I'm super nervous about Kirk, man. I don't know how you can not be nervous about Kirk Cousins. That deployment is problematic. Trying to watch him drive, like push off of his back, like his right foot, and get power with his throws, like velocity and drive. It's, I don't know. Like when I watch Drake London get open in tight zone coverage, or I watch Drake London run a couple of really nice out routes in this game, and then I'm watching Kirk Cousins play, I'm like, yeah, of course he's not throwing it to Drake London. He doesn't have the arm to get it at this point. Not even just the arm. He doesn't have the velocity because he does no power with his lower body, or he's not confident in it at this point to push that ball down the field to Drake London. So of course he comes out of this game with three targets, and Ray McLeod has seven, and Bijan has a bunch of targets. So look, my hope is, Dalton, that this is rust, that this is a new coaching staff and a new quarterback. It's 1 week against a great defense, but I don't know how we cannot come out of Drake London's week one with at least some panic. And that's kind of my bottom line verdict. How about you?
I agree with your general assessment. I won't even push back. I will just say, if you spent a top 20 pick on him, you have my permission to have total panic at this point. Yeah, I do have my permission because I'm somewhere in between those two.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And it just, all of this looms very large with the fact that they took a quarterback in the top 10 this year. And then
Penix, why not play him? Well, it's just a weird situation.
Optics. I think it's got to be just optics, right? Like, you gave this guy $100 million in free agency, and you got to at least play him a little bit. I just wonder how long the leash is. I mean, I think
I was going to say, so it's become more live of him getting benched now after week one, clearly, right? Yeah.
100%. 100%. Let me put it to you this way. Coming out of week one, just how I feel right now on Monday morning, I would be surprised if we don't see Penix this year, is basically how I feel about the situation
at this point. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And you can't tell me and this is just it's a team building organizational question, the whole thing. But now, at this point now, after watching what I just watched in week one, you can't tell me that this isn't why they took Penix. It was so confusing on draft night, right? Why did they take this guy? Well, maybe because they signed a 36-year-old quarterback coming off of an Achilles that they're not 100% confident in. Like, that has to be the answer, right? And let's say just one more thing here, and then we will move on. This is a new staff getting in there, a new coaching staff at least. My read on the situation is that by the time this coaching staff was hired, they were already pretty far down the line, like the front office and ownership, in terms of we're going to be the ones to get Kirk Cousins in free agency. And then I think the coaching staff got involved here and they fell in love with Penix, and it's now a competing interest thing, which could make this just all the more messy on the field. But that is my general read on the situation. So yeah, coming out of week one, I think Dalton and I are somewhere between some panic and total panic on Drake London. And I believe we, at this point right now, obviously I could change my mind, but right now I feel like we will see we will see Michael Penix at some point this season. Okay, let's move on to our next email submission here from Thomas Wilson. And this one's a doozy, buddy, because we got to get through a few players here. And, Thomas, my guy, honestly, I'm just happy that you're still engaging with football content and fantasy football content right now, because if I had this week one, I would not be doing that. I'd have been taking a little bit of a break here. So shout out to you for still engaging with us and listening. You're a tough real man, that is for sure. Okay, Thomas writes in a keeper league that I have not made the playoffs in since it started 3 years ago, I traded for Drake London. I used my 1.01 pick to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. Dalton Kincaid is my tight end. Terry McLaurin is my wide receiver three. And I have Travis Etienne, who might be getting supplanted by Tank Bigsby. All right, Dalton, let's take this one by one and decide where we're at from a panic perspective. Let's start off with Marvin Harrison Jr., who had one catch for 4 yards on Sunday.
Well, I watched this game closely as someone who had the Bills in my high-stakes survivor, which the payout's $14 million this year, Harmon. Wow, that was tough. I did lose an entry on the Bengals, to be clear. I don't want to make it seem like this was an easy year. My home one actually had the Bengals, my survivor, so I'm out there. But still have a few entries in the big one. Thank you to Josh Allen, representing Fireball. Just what a beast. Marvin Harrison Jr. Did not receive a target until midway through the second quarter, in which he dropped wide open, an easy curl route, three targets. But in his defense, he didn't practice all preseason. He didn't play in any of the preseason. Sorry, not practice. He didn't play in any of the preseason games. There was no real live reps with Kyler Murray. The Buffalo Bills absolutely provided safety help to cover Harrison throughout Sunday's game. It was clear the entire time. Harrison was wide open. I know it's been talked about late in the fourth quarter. Murray sees him. He looks to the right after the pump fake. A half a second longer, Marvin Harrison Jr. catches a game-winning touchdown to win by 1 point in his NFL debut, and the whole perception's different. That said,
and
Don's
puking all over his lap.
I know. Brutal. It was, I know. You should see my whoop. The amount of calories I burned watching my daughter race and during this Bills game, Harmon, were both over 3,000. But anyway.
Incredible stuff.
Where were we? Marvin Harrison, you're panicking because you spent a top 15 pick on a rookie. And so, yes, because there's absolutely no history here, there's some panic, right? I mean, you're spending the highest draft pick ever on a fantasy rookie, and he goes out and lays an egg week one. So you have to be crazy not to panic a little. But I mean, the offense looked great. It was a tough matchup. Far better days are ahead. So yeah, certainly only some. I mean, it minimal panic.
I think I originally wanted to go no panic, but I'm with you that I think we got to give it some panic here for Marvin Harrison Jr. just because of the way it looks on paper and the fact that he is a rookie. And you know, by the end of the season in like sicko best ball drafts, he was a first round pick, right?
Yes.
So I get that. You know, I have him in at least one league that I'd really like to win. I don't feel great about it right now. A couple of different context factors. I haven't gotten a chance to totally watch this game back yet, but I have seen some of it. Jacob Gibbs, our buddy, notes that the average route depth, distance from the line of scrimmage that the initial cut is in his routes comes for Marvin Harrison Jr. was 12.1 yards. Jacob says, I was worried about this. In week one, he was used as a pure X receiver, vertical stretch receiver. Harrison was open on a decent number of routes where Murray was not even looking his way. It felt like some of his routes took forever to develop. I do think that's a little bit concerning. part of what I was encouraged about for Harrison this year was that we were going to see him and Michael Wilson kind of swap X receiver duty so they would get Harrison some more layups. I think that will have to be a focus going forward. The reason I don't want to panic here is because I generally like the way the offense flowed. I think Murray played pretty well in a tough spot on the road against one of the best defensive coaches in the league in Sean McDermott. They're probably, as you mentioned, scheming to take Harrison away. I think they overdid it with Greg Dortch, as I said on Sunday night's game. Like, come on, man, let's get the big guys the football here. I just don't think we will see very many games where Marvin Harrison Jr. and Michael Wilson, who caught the touchdown early on, and then that was pretty much it. I just do not think there will be very many weeks when those guys combine for, you know, five freaking targets.
And I'm not sure if he did the final drive, but the last stat I saw, Kyler Murray did not complete a pass over 10 yards in this game. It was windy conditions, and it was all underneath. He was not attacking downfield at all. So things will get better in the future. I mean, he's going to be playing indoors in a bunch of NFC West matchups. I think things will get better. But again, if you spent such an early pick and you just look at the targets, forget the yards and the touchdowns, lack of them. You just look at the lack of targets, and you're just a little concerned.
Yeah, Kyler Murray, according to Next Gen Stats, I have this here somewhere. Yeah, he was 19 of 23 on passes under 10 air yards, but he did struggle to push anything beyond 10 air yards. And I don't think that will hold against lesser defenses and in better conditions. So I'm with Dalton. I'll allow us to get to some panic on Marvin Harrison Jr., but my inclination is not to really panic too much here. Let's go to Travis Etienne, who I think we got to have some panic for just because Tank Bigsby looked like a functional NFL player in week one, which is not what he looked like as a rookie. A lot of Bigsby's opportunity came after Etienne fumbled. I get that. But at the same time, man, I think that's generally going to have to be a concern that hangs over Etienne's season, because they've said all along this is not a guy they want to give feature back work to.
Yeah, Jacksonville has been screaming all summer that they planned on decreasing Etienne's workload this season after he wore down, after being given more carries than ever last year. The question was whether, you know, Tank Bigsby can step up and take advantage of it. And they split carries evenly week one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some concern. That said, Etienne was a couple feet away from scoring his second touchdown. Wild turn of events. If he does not fumble going into the end zone, Jacksonville's up 24-7 in this football game, but instead he loses a fumble, and his box score doesn't look nearly as good. And especially with Bigsby getting that amount of carries, it's something I expect moving forward. ETN's efficiency, I want to say, will shoot back up, but you know, once he's not worn down like last year, you're going to see that yards per carry bounce back, and maybe Jacksonville's overall team environment. Look at that defense is a lot better than me gave it credit for. So he can still be plenty valuable. He doesn't need all the carries that he was given last year, but yes, those drafting him really expecting 300 plus carries, I think, are going to be very, very disappointed, because this Bigsby workload is going to continue.
Yeah. So are you good with some panic for him?
Yeah.
Yeah, some panic, not total panic. I just think it's going to cause you to adjust your expectations a little bit. Okay, let's move on to the next one that he mentions here. Dalton Kincaid, another very popular submission here. Dalton Kincaid is my tight end. How much should we be panicking about Dalton Kincaid? Before we talk about this, Dalton, I will just throw out that Dwayne McFarland of Fantasy Life pointed out that Dalton Kincaid bombed in the box score today, but playing time wasn't an issue based on early data. 88% of the snaps, 83% of the routes, 9% of the targets. Dwayne advises, stay calm, y'all. Those are fantastic underlying numbers for a tight end. Guessing final percentages might be a tad lower, but Dawson Knox, meanwhile, 55% of the snaps, 43% of the routes, also 9% of the targets. So I say that first before I throw it to you, Dalton, because does the fact that he was on the field as much and generally had the role we expected but still wasn't targeted, does that make you want to panic more or less on Dalton Kincaid?
Oh, far less. That's huge. I was worried about the Knox splits last year. Look at box score production throughout the league in week one. At tight ends was embarrassing. I mean, McBride, 8 points. Kelsey, 6.4. Mark Andrews, 3 points. Evan Ingram, 1 point. Njoku injured. Ferguson injured. The number one tight end was a backup likely. Can you name the number two scoring fantasy tight end this week, Harmon? You probably can't, but Island of Dr. Foster Moreau was
that's right.
The legend. Number two fantasy tight end this week. So it was just a tough slate at the position. We were all, including myself, confident in tier one this year. But no, you love that that underlying usage. That's huge. So treat Kincaid the same. And one thing I will point out about this, that I expected Keon Coleman to have a slow rookie season, and he immediately led Buffalo in routes run, targets, catches, receiving yards. So that you're really encouraged if you grabbed Coleman. But I expect the targets to be spread around, but Kincaid to ultimately be fine and settle in as a top five-ish fantasy tight end. So it's no panic for me. Well, because of McFarland, to be clear, that's the reason I'm not panicking, is the usage.
I want to give it some panic because I think expectations were so high on Kincaid. And I didn't have him as a tier one tight end. I had him as a tier two tight end, but still a top five generally tight end. I just think there's going to be some weekly risk like this because nothing about his rookie season really showed that he was a good player, good tight end and earned targets, but nothing showed that he was really going to be the dominating clear-cut number one, 120 targets type of tight end. It was more, okay, he could be a 100 type target guy, maybe 110. But I do think the fact that all these receivers, like the fact that Coleman looks like a guy who, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar right away. I would love to go. That's some film I want to chart this week is Keon Coleman from an alignment perspective. What's he doing there? I know he was tough at the catch point, but I knew he was going to be tough at the catch point. That's not an issue. I'm wondering what the rest of it looks like. The fact that he was viable, the fact that Shakir looks great, Matt Collins was doing his sacrificial X receiver stuff, and Curtis Samuel played 30% of the snaps or 30% of the routes, whatever it was. We know that's coming up in the future too once he's a little farther away from his preseason injury. So that's the only reason that I'm a little I'll go some panic on Dalton Kincaid just because I don't know that he is going to hog the targets in this offense. I think it will be pretty well spread around.
Yeah, I'm totally okay with some panic, actually, because a couple other counters are his red zone usage is a concern dating back to last year, and Josh Allen's is such a beast there, and even Knox is involved there. And volume in general, after Joe Brady took over last season, the Bills were by far the most run-heavy team. They weren't just like they switched. They it would have been, I think, pretty sure like historical at their pace as far as how run-heavy they were. And now week one, we have Josh Allen attempting 23 passes in a game they fell behind early. I mean, against the worst defense in the league, arguably. So I don't know. Maybe this team is just going to really, really run the football a lot, and there's just going to be not enough targets to go around. But that said, tight end is such a low hurdle to clear. I think Kincaid's going to have some spike weeks. He's going to ultimately be fine, but you have my permission for some minor panic.
Yeah, and the great point about the run-first philosophy here. And, as we discussed last week with Nate Tice, like this run game is good. They have no incentive to move away from it after what they did last year. And then so far through week one, the Bills have the seventh highest rushing success rate through week one. So and some of that's Josh Allen, but still they gave
in Arizona.
Arizona. But regardless, they have no incentive to move away from that philosophy. At this point.
Hopefully Allen's hand doesn't affect him. I don't know how bad he hurt that left hand on that second touchdown run, but he wrapped it twice. Again, as someone who is hypervigilant watching this, I mean, he's tough and he'll play through anything. Can you play through a broken left hand? I don't know. But Allen is very, very tough. But that injury is something to monitor. Like he definitely hurt himself on that play.
All right. And final one here from Thomas. He said, Terry McLaurin is my wide receiver 3. Dalton, this breaks my heart, but I really hope I'm wrong. But I do want to kind of go total panic on Terry McLaurin. Do you have any pushback on me on this one?
Zero pushback. No Washington player saw more than 4 targets. McLaurin deserves better, Harmon. You know better than anyone. I mean, if you look at the history of his quarterbacks, it is bad. So yeah, and I love Jaden Daniels somehow was the number 3 fantasy QB this week, but obviously that's going to be all about his legs. Not only does McLaurin have a raw rookie quarterback problem, he has an awful offensive line and a coaching problem. I mean, it's just tough, man. I mean, obviously league dependent, but you're keeping McLaurin on fantasy benches if possible for the time being.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin. I mean, the alignment, it's all outside. It's not great. I don't love that, man. Yeah. So this is from Grant Paulson, who I love that Grant has covered the Washington football team multiple names through for a long time. He said, "This is random, but I set an alarm for 9 p.m. today to remind myself to check Terry McLaurin's game one alignments." Anyway, Grant says, "Unofficially, I just went back and counted up 46 times where McLaurin lined up on the left and 3 times on the right, 0 times in motion pre-snap." I mean,
Wow.
Horrific.
That's what Kingsbury did with Hopkins, right?
Correct. Never creating matchup advantages for your best player, but like, oh yeah, let's make sure we get Olamide Zaccheaus in motion, and let's make sure, you know, we get that was as discouraging as possible, I think, from a week one performance for an offense. I do not feel great about Terry McLaurin. I will say this, and you know, I mentioned this on Reception Perception, the show recently. I do think McLaurin has taken a slight step back as a player. Like I think his best years were probably, you know,
old prospect, right? Didn't he enter the league pretty old?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Older prospect.
I think it makes sense.
The 2023 season was his worst on film by far of any season that I've charted. So, you know, that could be nothing. It could be something, but it's just one other variable here to note. So yeah, I'm at total panic on Terry McLaurin, and I want people to watch the YouTube on this and be able to screen grab the total panic and throw this back in my face in 6 weeks. That's what I want. That's what my heart desires. But my head is saying total panic at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Did you see Jaden Daniels' first, it was not official, but his first career NFL pass attempt was a 13-yard loss that went down as a fumble. It was pretty hilarious. He just threw it sideways. My guy, Brian Robinson, looked fantastic. Your guy, Austin Ekeler, looked good. It's clear his injury prevented him from, you know, being his old self. Like he looked better, but it's a bad setup for him. And Brian Robinson's a beast, capable of doing more as a receiver. He almost had 2 touchdowns, fell just a foot short of the end zone, and then Daniels stole the touchdown. Brian Robinson, I think, can maybe be good enough to be a top 15 fantasy back, even overcoming this environment. Am I crazy to say that? He just looks like a borderline budding star to me, man. I think he can. I'm probably off base there. Again, bad offensive line, quarterback that's going to steal all the rushing touchdown. Eckler's there to steal the targets. Bad team. So it's all a lot going against him, but I don't know. He just seems like Ramondre Stevenson, another one, a guy who can just overcome his environment. And I'm kind of putting Robinson there. I could see someone saying to sell high, you know, because it's all those other negatives. But to me, Robinson's just a really good player, and I think you're going to be happy if you got him in the 8th to 10th round.
I do agree with you that he's a good player. I've had him. I drafted him in the 3rd round of my number one like dynasty league that I care about, and I've always liked him as a back. I just think the setup is going to be problematic for fantasy. Whereas with Stevenson, though, I don't think his setup is as problematic as it was believed preseason, which is why I have an awful lot of Ramondre Stevenson this year. But yeah, we're at total panic for Terry McLaurin. Usually, we're going to do the voice memos at the top, but I felt like those all were really kind of some of the biggest names. But let's move on to another big name here. Amon-Ra St. Brown. We have one voice memo submitted from Real Bitcoin Dog on social media. Do voice memos on we'll have that discussion off air.
I got the Satoshi Nakamoto hat behind me. Let's go. All right. I like this guy. All right.
I don't know what you I do not know what you just said, but
I know.
Okay.
I was sure of that. Yes.
Again, we'll have this discussion off air. I'm open to learning. So Real Bitcoin Dog sends us in via social media, which you can also do. You don't have to submit to the mailbag. You can send these in. Let's hear what they had to say.
What up, Harmon? This is the Real Bitcoin Dog, and I am panicked over my number one pick from my draft, the sun god Amon-Ra St. Brown. He only got 3 catches last night in the win against my LA Rams, and this guy out of nowhere, Jameson Williams, gets over 100 yards and a touchdown. So is Amon-Ra no longer the number one receiver in Detroit? I'm panicked!
All right, we also did get an email about St. Brown that I wanted to read too. Suresh Reddy says, is J-Mo now the number one in Detroit? Is Amon-Ra going to be a blocker more than a pass catcher? Is my first round pick cooked? I chose him because he's consistent and reliable, but how consistent can he be if he's splitting his targets here on a run-heavy offense? Dalton, panic, no panic, some panic, total panic for Amon-Ra St. Brown after probably one of the more unexpected week one dud performances.
I'm in between no and some, just because this is a run-first offense that rely on two running backs, Sam Laporta, and if Jameson Williams does emerge this year, I mean, a guy who was, you know, put up eye-popping numbers in college, finally healthy. He had never, he never recorded 70 receiving yards in a game though before last night. So Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to be totally fine, but you can have some panic if you took him over Justin Jefferson, something like that. You know what I mean? Like if you're maybe you're regretting like that or something, but he's going to be awesome. And I wouldn't dramatically affect my ranking of him. But if Jameson Williams truly is emerging as another option here and he's legit, yeah, I mean, next year, St. Brown's going to be a second or third round pick. Absolutely.
Yeah, right now, as we sit here today, I'm at no panic. because I need to see Jameson string these performances together before really, you know, freaking out about St. Brown, who I think is just such a fantastic player and is so critical to what they do. Like, let me put it to you this way. If Amon-Ra St. Brown catches 10 balls next week, you would be exactly 0% surprised. I don't give a damn what 100%. We saw on Sunday night. You'd be 0% surprised. So right now, as we sit here today, I'm not panicking about this, but I do agree with you that, you know, if Jameson Williams really emerges here, and, you know, I talked about this on the monologue at the Sunday night monologue on last night's podcast. Yeah, it changes the complexion of what we imagine from the Lions' target distribution. If he's going to be this player who can earn targets over the middle of the field and be the guy that he was in college, I do think that would change things, and especially because they were scheming him stuff. It wasn't just, oh, he's the X receiver and he's running deep routes and stuff like that. No, they were scheming him opportunities to get him in space to make use of his run-after-catch ability. And as great as Amon-Ra St. Brown is on those type of plays, Jameson Williams brings more juice than St. Brown. And this is, like, from a skill set perspective, this is why I've never had – and I love St. Brown. And I've been one of the biggest St. Brown backers since before he was drafted, Dalton. But I've made this comparison a lot that it's a lot like the Dark Knight. You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain. I could never get St. Brown into my tier one of redraft, dynasty, or NFL receivers because – this is just one thing in his game that he doesn't have where all the other tier one receivers do have this. The guys who are candidates to jump to tier one do have this. And James Williams, I don't think is going to be tier one receiver or anything like that, but he does bring that juice to this offense. So yeah, like we'll see what the week 2, 3, 4 results and usage looks like. But right now I'm still at no panic because St. Brown is a proven player.
That's totally fair. And before we move on from this game, this is a poor decision, me saying these words out loud. But in August, I bet Cooper Kupp most receptions 36-1 and most receiving yards 40-1. I won't bring it up again here for the rest of the year because I'm sure he'll get hurt any week now. But boy, that doesn't look a horrible closing line value after Puka Nacua. Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com might have been onto something there.
Yeah, Harman. Let's put a pin in that because we're talking about Puka after the break because I do want to revisit that Greg Rosenthal thing you just mentioned there. Okay, last memo, voice memo submission to the fantasy mailbag comes in from Bads/Dustin. I think that was who sent this in. It's a Mark Andrews voice memo. Let's hear what Dustin had to say.
The first submission this season's People's Panic Meter has to be Mark Andrews, doesn't it? Like, if it was up to me, this dude would be no line, no cover, VIP to the coping corner. That's because this doesn't look like a bust case to me. This looks like a guy who's toast. And you might be like, oh, well, no, man, he's just a little bit banged up. You know, he's still Mark Andrews. I don't know if it matters that he's still Mark Andrews because he has a huge problem. He has an Isaiah Likely problem. Because the thing is, when Kelsey's banged up, you don't see Noah Gray go out there and go 12 for 111. What Isaiah Likely did this weekend, Mark Andrews is incapable of. At his absolute peak of his powers, he cannot do what Isaiah Likely did this weekend. I think one of these guys should be on the waiver wire and the other should be an elite tight end. And I think we got him flipped. That's why I'm panicked.
All right. So Dalton, Dustin is about as down bad on Mark Andrews as you possibly could be here. What do you think about Andrews after, it was a while ago now, but the Thursday night opener?
Yeah, the problem is with Andrews was on the field when Likely was setting career highs in route participation, target rate, and team air yard percentage. What's the deal with Mark Andrews' ankle, that ankle surgery? Because I've heard some doctors concerned that he's not healthy. I've heard others say that's fine. He was moving around the same. So I think there's some level of a concern there. A team that also wants to run the football, and now you have this beast Likely those reports saying that they were going to be the team's number two receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever, if he's whatever, 2A, 2B with Flowers, or maybe he's moved ahead of Andrews. Totally have my permission to have panic here. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was discouraging the fact that he has another person playing the same position, seeing so much usage. I mean, how could you not be a little concerned looking at Likely the way he just looked like a star out there?
Yeah, he looks awesome. And it was clear at the end of last year, it was obvious in the offseason that 12 personnel should be the base of their offense. No smart organization would look at the complexion of this roster and think, oh, just because for philosophical reasons or schematic reasons, we got to have our number three receiver, Nelson Aguilar, on the field more than our second tight end, Isaiah Likely. No smart team would look at it that way. The Ravens are a smart team. Week one didn't play out that way. Okay. So that's going to be the base of their offense. These two guys are going to be on the field together on probably 50% of the snaps. And I wrote about this on Twitter too, that creates some weird stuff with both of these receivers. And from a deployment perspective, I think they have to figure that out. That will be a little bit of troubleshooting. This is yet another team, by the way, that doesn't play their guys at all in the preseason. I think probably could have benefited seeing what this looks like from a deployment perspective with 12 personnel being the main offense. I've also seen others note that, you know, and I've watched film back on this too. You can kind of see this too, that the Chiefs were scheming away Mark Andrews. Andrews is also coming off a car accident. So I'm just at some panic with Andrews in the way that I don't think you can view him as a tier one tight end. You know, it's just Travis Kelce's a little banged up. Noah Gray doesn't go off for 100+ yards and a touchdown and become like the player on offense, right? They mix in other tight ends and things like that, but not to this degree. So to me, I'm going to go with some panic, but I also wouldn't totally freak. I'm not at Dustin levels of panic about Mark Andrews. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm good with some panic with Andrews. And as someone who was in on Derrick Henry, I know matchups will improve, but boy, you've got to be some panic with this offensive line. I know it's no surprise. Point, yeah. And we all expected it, but they've still somehow created the best yards for contact the last 4 years. I thought that Lamar Jackson and the scheme would overcome that, but boy, that offensive line was not off to a great start in week one.
Yeah, I haven't talked about this on the pod yet, but my overall take with the very hyper analysis of everything that happened with Baltimore in week one is that let's see what this looks like in week two at home against the Raiders, as opposed to on the road against the best team in the NFL in one of the most hostile environments.
But Raiders D line.
Well, yeah,
I
totally get that. I totally hear you. But I just mean from like a game flow, game script perspective, sure, how these players are deployed and everything. Like, I don't think Likely's going away. And I do think Justice Hill is going to be a little bit of a thorn in everybody who has Derrick Henry's side all year long. Just sort of the integration. It did go very under-discussed how difficult it is to mold Derrick Henry's rushing style with Lamar Jackson's rushing style. Because on paper, you're like, oh, this is going to be cool. And it was cool to see in week one. But Derrick Henry has typically been an under center back, and Lamar Jackson's typically been a shotgun quarterback. So there's a little bit of a molding there that needs to take place, which I think when you're beating the Raiders Likely in week two can be a little bit easier than on the road in Kansas City.
I believe Henry's road is worth probably small sample, but his shotgun numbers were good throughout his career. And yeah, next week, you said it, Harmon. I mean, 8.5-point favorites at home. They have 10 days to, you know, coming off a loss. You do like the setup here for Henry quite a bit better than week one.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through some of our social submissions to the People's Panic Meter right after this. All right, Dalton, let's start off with a pretty catastrophic one from @GridironGrok. The Carolina Panthers have fans hitting the panic button so hard they might break it. After their latest performance, it looks like Groundhog Day. So, Dalton, the Panthers were destroyed in week one. Bryce Young 2024 looked like Bryce Young 2023, maybe even worse in the week one opener. And oh, by the way, their maybe best overall player, but certainly best defensive player, Derrick Brown, is now going to miss significant time too. Yeah. So Bryce Young, Panthers, I'm at total panic. Where are you?
Full-blown panic. Bryce Young was just awful. His completion percentage over expectation was in the 6th percentile. He was picked off in his first pass attempt of the game and his second in the second half. I'm willing to reevaluate my Panthers hope. Dave Canales has his work cut out for him. I mean, this is a problem. Deontay Johnson, historically been much more productive against man-heavy defenses like New Orleans, was held to 19 scoreless yards during a game that was played indoors with Carolina pass-heavy down big. This is bad. He belongs on fantasy benches until further notice. Is there any hope with Bryce Young right now? The New Orleans defense was drafted in fantasy because we like their schedule, but this is not projected to be one of the best defenses in the league, and he just looked hopeless. So I'm concerned. It's a new system, so maybe it'll take some time, but boy, this is discouraging for those who hoped Bryce Young was a sneaky super flex option and guys like me who were encouraged with Deontay Johnson going to get 140 targets. This was ugly, man.
It was ugly, about as ugly as it possibly could get. I would say that New Orleans wasn't projected to be like a top five defense, but they're annually a really good defense with Dennis Allen in the fold there. So they don't do, they've got other problems. Not coming off yesterday. I mean, dude, the Panthers, I'm close to putting them in the coping corner because you've got Derek Carr holding up three like fingers to J.C. Horn on Sunday because he dropped three touchdowns on the Panthers. So close to putting them in the coping corner here, but it's always a good defense in New Orleans. Dennis Allen is a good coach, and they have some good players over there. They were top six in passing success rate allowed last year. So it's a tough spot. Again, on the road in New Orleans, but at the same time, man, yeah, it's about as concerning as you could possibly get for
Legette. Actually, Xavier Legette actually looked flashed some plays there. Was there no worry about Chris Olave, who had two catches for 11 yards when the New Orleans was up 30-3 at halftime? I mean, game script kept them away from the second half, but and Carolina actually allowed the second fewest fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks. It's just a thing with them. But is there some concern? Another guy we were projecting, the Clint Kubiak motion, and we like London, he was getting drafted for growth, like a significant growth in his game, and week one's a little discouraging, no?
Yes, great transition, Dalton Deldon, to our next submission here. This one comes in from @JacobDeal_film. Chris Olave, because it feels like I've seen this movie before, which is the haunting thing. I also wanted to throw up this GIF from @SRCH_17, where it's just Squidward watching Patrick and SpongeBob run around and have some fun. A classic GIF. That was what it felt like to be Chris Olave in week one as the Saints score 47 points. I think I'm going to allow some panic here, Dalton, just because I do think I like the way the Saints offense looked in week one. That's the exciting part. But I also think it was a reminder that they have some other options here. That was why I had Chris Olave ranked outside of my top 15 receivers, as much as I am a huge Olave stan. They're not going to play the Panthers every week, but I'm only going to go some panic here because typically, Dalton, my advice on these blowout game scripts is kind of just throw the results out, and you know, normal games will breed some more normal results, but maybe I'm underreacting to that.
Apologies for jumping ahead on the timeline there.
Oh, you're good.
Olave, yes, there's some panic for the reasons we stated, but as we on the other hand, Derek Carr attempted 23 passes in this game. I mean, so you know, obviously there's nothing there in the second half for him, but he'll have matchups in which he'll dominate the targets. And Rashid Shaheed is a total spike week guy, best ball guy. And he had his big game, you know, this week. So Olave will obviously be much better. But man, for those who looked at the box score when it was 30-0 before a last second field goal in the first half and saw Olave sitting there with two catches for 11 scoreless yards, I mean, had to be infuriated.
All right, next one comes in from @TJ_TMorrison23. Puka. Knee injury in preseason, was allegedly 100% coming into week one, but couldn't get through the first half without exiting. Dalton, you mentioned the Greg Rosenthal report, quote. It was from his podcast NFL Daily, where he told Evan Silva that Puka was a guy he was fading in the first round of fantasy drafts. And he just, you know, kind of just stood on that.
In a weird health way. He was like, I'm not going to say anymore. It wasn't just like, I don't like him for fantasy. It's like, I have information and boy, I'm worried about his health this year. Yeah.
And, you know, if people don't know, that NFL Network building pretty close to where the Rams play football. So I don't know. There could be something there. Jordan Rodrigue, who is also on his podcast recently, frequently covers the Rams. This is where I push back a little bit on TJ, the submission here, because I don't think there was any reason to assume he was 100% coming into week one. And, you know, this situation has definitely been on my radar for a minute here. From a talent perspective, coming like before this injury with Puka, I said I think that he has taken the step over Cooper Kupp as the number one wide receiver. And that is, I think, would have been true if Puka Nacua was healthy, but he's not healthy. And like, if he's not healthy, I'm obviously at total panic here for Puka Nacua. Like if he's back on the field at some point this season, he's playing all the snaps and all the routes, then I kind of come back to no panic. The fact that Cooper Kupp is balling out doesn't make me worried about Puka Nacua at all. It's just a health thing. And the fact that there were some warning signs here leading up to this, you know, I think that's what makes you kind of towards that total panic if he's not healthy.
Yeah, total panic for me. It sucks if you got him. Hopefully the news is good. He's going to undergo testing Monday, so you'll probably know more when you hear this. Cooper Kupp. I think he had a career high in catches, which is wild for his age. Obviously, he gets an upgrade. And then look into Colby Parkinson and DeMarcus Robinson and maybe eventually Jordan Whittington. But those are guys to look at as potential deeper waiver wire options if Nacua is forced to miss time.
I should note, too, that like I mentioned last night on the pod, there are so many red flags with the Rams right now that I guess actually you could argue that if Puka misses like 5 weeks or something, and like I'm just being totally hypothetical right now. So let's say he misses 5 weeks, he comes back healthy, and by that point Stafford's banged up or Kupp's banged, you know, the offensive line continues to fall apart. A disaster season I do think is on the table here for the Rams, and I think they're one of the most fragile teams in the NFL. Like, just the ground that they're standing on right now is it's a castle made of sand for sure. So I think that also leads me to total panic with Puka. It's a health thing, of course. That's the reality of it. And yeah, spoiler alert, sometimes you're going to draft players, you're going to get hurt, and your season's going to be ruined. And Puka certainly is right up there now at this point on that warning sign, which absolutely sucks because he's such a fun player to watch when healthy. Next submission comes in from @TheDirtyHippie. Gotta love that. Malik Nabers. I did and still think he's transcendent enough to overcome bad quarterback play, but not capable of withstanding whatever it was Daniel Jones was doing out there. I'm sorry. My Vikings are not that good. Me and a bunch of my friends, all Vikings fans, were complaining about how bad he, Daniel Jones, was. Dalton, you gotta be pretty bad if the fans of the team you are playing are complaining about how bad you are at playing quarterback. So tough break for Malik Nabers in week 1. But dude, I mean, this is exactly what we expected. Is it not?
I was hoping Daniel Jones could be resemble a little bit closer to competent and not just awful stone worst stuff here. On the plus side, Nabers led New York in receiving yards at 100% route participation during all. So 50 dropbacks, and he participated in all 50 routes, funny splits in EPA. The Giants were +4.1 in EPA when Nabers was involved and -20.7 when he wasn't. So, I mean, he's like by far the best player on the field for the Giants already. It was a hit and misses with the rookies in week 1, and Nabers was actually right kind of in between. He actually had most of that yardage with like a quarter and a half left, and I thought he could, add on to that being down. But, I think Nabers will have a really nice rookie season and maybe even finish a better one than Marvin Harrison. But man, this quarterback situation is just so dreadful with Daniel Jones. I don't know what to say. I mean, Jones just looks so bad.
We have to go some panic, I think.
Yeah, some panic because of Daniel Jones. Yes, I will acknowledge it for sure. As a Nabers slappy, I will acknowledge it for sure.
Also, I think not even just because of Daniel Jones, but I've not watched this game back on film. The Giants are not my priority to watch back on film. I certainly will probably at some point here shortly, but just looking at the alignment data for these receivers and the target distribution works with this as well. According to PFF, Malik Nabers was in the slot on just 11.5% of his passing snaps. Darius Slayton 31.7%, and then Jalin Hyatt even 30.3%. And then obviously Wandell Robinson, 87% of his passing snaps in the slot. And Wandell Robinson led the team with 12 targets to Malik Nabers' 7. That's going to be an issue as long as Daniel Jones is under center. I know it's so easy. This is what happens all the time with, great receivers. And I think Malik Nabers will be a great receiver in the NFL. But this happens with great receivers all the time with bad quarterback plays. There's like a little binky player for them, and if Malik Nabers is not going to be the slot receiver and Wandale Robinson is going to be out there running a bunch of the routes, this will be an issue. He's going to suck up volume in that sort of PPR scam type of way. And that's going to lead to volatility for Malik Nabers. It's going to lead to games where he has 7 targets and 60 ish yards.
Nabers, a lot of his production in college came from the slot, a lot. And he was even used in motion a bit yesterday to help beat that press. I think Dable will get it done, but yeah, I'd like to see more slot usage out of Nabers for sure. I don't love hearing that about Wandale Robinson seeing so much usage there.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm always mean to players like Wandale Robinson. It's just like, what are we doing here? Like, you're going to draft Malik Nabers after all that slot usage and not just throw him into that role? I don't really understand that. But okay, final one final people.
That team won a playoff game, and Dable won Coach of the Year two seasons ago, right? We're one season removed from that happening, right? Did that really happen?
Yeah, just like Matt Nagy won Coach of the Year because they won a didn't they win a playoff game with Mitch Trubisky, or they went to the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky? Yeah. Same thing. So at least,
Kyle, the Bears, Kyle Shanahan's never won, right? Kyle Shanahan never won Coach of the Year. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Okay. At least they didn't pay Mitch Trubisky like $100 million or whatever. But you know,
I thought Mitch Trubisky was going to be in my life big time yesterday. He was warming up when Josh Allen was getting a second rap on that left hand. Man, I thought he was going to have to hold that Buffalo win for me. But thankfully, Allen's a beast.
All right, let's toss to our final break. We come back, we have our new waiver wire segment to debut this year, Dalton Del Don. Let's get to it right after this. All right, welcome to our new waiver wire segment. This is the waiver wire menu. You know, you go out to eat places, you get things in different sizes. Dalton, neither you or I is a big fast food bro. It's a great face, by the way, if you're watching on YouTube from Dalton there. Neither one of us is a big fast food bro, but that's kind of how we're going to structure this segment here. Each week, Dalton and I are going to give you a large, medium, and small priority on the waiver wire. Usually we're going to each have three respective names, but there were some obvious ones that we need to hit this week. And again, we're doing this on a short turnaround. So we both, let's get fat early here, Dalton, and let's go for our large size priority right off the top. We both have Chargers running back J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, Dobbins, on one hand, he had 4 rushing yards at halftime and was caught from behind not once but twice, Harmon, in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. He had sure touchdown runs, just caught from behind on them. But that's still 131 yards after halftime. Was clearly more effective than Gus Edwards. This is a team that wants to run the ball. Alt looked awesome his first game. That offensive line's going to be good. So even if Dobbins is hobbling around there and no longer has the explosion, he's simply a must-add in all fantasy leagues as a lead back on the Chargers. And hopefully he can stay healthy. He was in store for a huge season last year, if not, you know, before he got hurt. It was week one, but he was set up to score a ton of touchdowns in that system. So Dobbins is the clear and obvious fantasy pickup of the week. He's available in 51% of Yahoo leagues last I checked.
Yeah, he looked awesome, I think, in week one from a Dobbins-adjusted expectation standpoint. I would say he looked awesome. A guy that was breaking, you know, tackles, making big plays. He was out there, you know, really, I think, setting the tempo for that offense on some of these runs. I think this was a hot hand backfield going forward, Dalton, and, like, this was somebody that was the hottest hand in week one. Like, his mitts are sizzling after week one. So I think we should consider him the favorite to lead this team, certainly lead the backfield in rushes and in pass work too. He ran 17 routes, by far the most among the running backs. And I came away kind of, I don't know if you watched much of the Chargers Raiders game, but I came away kind of feeling like, okay, about this Chargers offense. Joe Alt played great. Some of the interior play wasn't as good from an offensive line perspective. Herbert is so good at sack avoidance, though. He should have been sacked a lot more in that game against that fearsome Raiders front. You know, Ladd McConkey looked good. I thought, so overall, I felt pretty good about the Chargers offense. And I think if Dobbins can give them something, that's going to be an even bigger dimension for them.
Yeah, I'm ranking Dobbins ahead of Edwards moving forward. That was actually the Chargers' longest run in 2 seasons, Dobbins' fourth quarter run. Don't love the old McConkey over Palmer week one. Looks like a loss there. For me right away, the rookie getting the work. Yeah. You did try to tell me on that one. But I try to tell people Zamir White has an Alexander Mattison problem, and that's that definitely came through. But Chargers are gonna, you know, be a work in progress with that new offense, but they're gonna want to run the football, and Dobbins is a beneficiary.
Let's talk Ravens here for our medium priority. We actually both were gonna talk Isaiah Likely, but I'll actually talk about Justice Hill. But I'll let you lead this thing off with medium priority Isaiah Likely off the waiver wire.
Yeah, just he was his route participation and target shares for week one were just through the roof, and 69%, 30% compared to just 5% for Mark Andrews, who may still have that ankle injury lingering. So yeah, it's a tight end, such a crapshoot position. We all saw Likely in prime time, you know, an inch away from that second touchdown, looked like a star. So you're adding him in every fantasy league and seeing where it goes from here.
Yeah, not to mention David Njoku's probably out for multiple weeks. Jake Ferguson, sounds like he avoided a serious injury, but he's dealing with something too. Rest of season rankings-wise, Dalton, where would you have Isaiah Likely?
That's a great question. Well, because of those injuries and it's a total crapshoot after 12, man, that's tough. Like 10-ish, 11? Yeah. What do you want? Bowers or Likely, something around there type? Yeah. I don't know. Something like that.
I mean, like Kelsey, Laporta, Trey McBride, Mark Andrews, Kincaid, Kittle, who hasn't played yet as we're recording this. I think those guys are definite. Maybe Evan Ingram, maybe. Like once we get to
question
the,
right then. Yeah.
Yeah. Once we get to the Evan Ingram, Kyle Pitts zone, I almost think I'd rather have, and Dallas Goedert too. I almost think I'd rather have Isaiah Likely than these guys.
You absolutely could talk me into that. Yeah, no, I'm concerned with Pitts, and yes, I could see that. So he's where does that put him? Eighth or ninth?
Yeah, somewhere around like seven, yeah. Eight, nine. And yeah, I think that he's someone, if he's available in your league, and I know he was drafted in some leagues, whatever, but I would be pretty aggressive trying to get old Isaiah Likely there.
Only 28% rostered in Yahoo as we're recording.
Yeah, I think he's a beast, man. He's a really good player, and overall I expect this offense to be good, which is why I'm going to throw Justice Hill out here as a medium priority player, because he's the exact type of running back I want on my bench, Dalton, because one, I think he's going to have some standalone value. You know, it was funny when all offseason, you know, there was consistent coach speak hype about what they expected from Rashad Bateman. And obviously I talked about that on the show with Jory Epstein, where she laughed in my face, which maybe it's going to age well for Jory. But hey, second leading receiver on the Baltimore Ravens, Rashad Bateman, let the record show. I'm getting tweets on tweets about Rashad Bateman, and more receiving yards than Mark Andrews and Zay Flowers. So shut up, haters. Played a ton. I think he's going to be fine. But there was a lot of hype on that. People just kind of completely ignored the coach speak hype on Justice Hill and even Isaiah Likely to a degree. I think some people were like keeping an eye on Likely, but you know, John Harbaugh said in the offseason, we view Justice Hill as a starting running back. He's going to play a lot for us. And people are just kind of like, okay, cool, whatever. He played a lot in week one, and he was involved in the passing game. He was involved in the run game, and he does give them like a legit dimension that Derrick Henry doesn't. So maybe I'm crazy. Maybe this is fully week one pilled, but he has standalone value. And I do think if something happens to Derrick Henry, he would probably be the top running back on this team.
Yeah, he absolutely would be. He should be a must roster in all serious fantasy leagues. There's a lot of upside there. It was interesting to see Lamar Jackson throw to his running back so much. That's typically not a thing for this run. So I'm sitting there as a Henry guy. I'm like, as frustrating as it is to see Hill get these, boy, I hope Jackson continues to, because Henry got a couple targets, including some designed ones. So if that's something he's going to start doing more, that's good news even for Henry. And Justice Hill does look like the clear backup there. So big upside with him. So I'm good with that one.
Yeah, I don't think there will be a bunch of these Mickey Mouse running back and Mickey Mouse Zay Flowers targets. At least I hope not going forward for the Baltimore Ravens, because that would be bad news. It's not going to be a good offense if it's run that way. But again, I do just kind of want to chalk a lot of the negative stuff up to new offensive line, didn't play in the preseason, on the road against best team in the NFL, a lot of that stuff. So I do want to kind of chalk that up a little bit here. I'll give off my small priority name here on the waiver wire, because I know you have like a ton to go through. So my small priority is Baker Mayfield. You know, he's a guy who's pretty well available in Yahoo leagues. I mean, he's at about like 34% rostered, but next three opponents for the Bucks: Detroit, high scoring game; Denver, Philadelphia, pretty good schedule. If you have Jordan Love or one of these guys, I think he's an awesome pickup. And potentially could, like, I might have more confidence in starting Baker Mayfield than Joe Burrow in week two. So if he's available, he's somebody I would consider. You don't have to go crazy for quarterbacks, because of course you could just grab Fields, who's lower rostered. You know, I don't really want to play Derek Carr at Dallas next week, but he is coming off a 3-touchdown game. I probably don't really want to play your boy Sam Darnold against your Niners in week two. But yeah, so I think right now, guy who's widely available, if you need a replacement quarterback, I would go for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, it was a favorable matchup, but Mayfield was awesome week one, just totally dominant. And it's encouraging, you know, first game without Dave Canales, and now Jalen McMillan looks like a potential real legit number three target there too. So yeah, Mayfield, I believe I'm going to have ranked too low entering the year. As for just, I got a couple few for you, Harmon, not too many. First, Tank Bigsby, just 5% rostered in Yahoo leagues. He's the split carry, same number of carries as Travis Etienne, and would obviously has contingent fantasy value if Etienne were to go down. Alexander Mattison. Mattison had the longest touchdown of his career, a 31-yard catch, and outsnapped Zamir White 36-23. Zamir White had 6 yards on 6 touches at halftime and then lost a fumble in the third quarter. So, Mattison available in 96% of Yahoo leagues. And finally, a really deep one here, Jalen Naylor available in 100% of Yahoo leagues on the Vikings. You look at Scott Barrett's new stat in fantasy points. Naylor was number one in average separation score last year. And now Jordan Addison set to undergo tests Monday after injuring his ankle again. Sam Darnold may be good. So Naylor, for you deep leaguers out there, someone to keep your eye on.
Yeah, no, those are all really good call outs. Did you mention Bucky Irving? I don't think we mentioned him, but he's probably somebody who should be rostered.
Well deserving, yeah. Available in Yahoo, absolutely. He looks like a good. White's going to continue to get his as a receiver, but Irving, didn't he get like more? I believe he had twice as many yards as Rashad White on 6 fewer carries. Yeah, and he looked good on the eye test too. So yeah, Irving's another good one, Harmon.
All right, buddy, that's going to do it. Hell of a debut for the week one post week one people's panic meter, Dalton. I think, you know, look, Barron's did all right on this show last year. My bold prediction, maybe not bold prediction, is I think you're going to be even better at this. You're just reactionary enough, but not too reactionary. So shout out to you for a great show. Appreciate you doing it, man.
Appreciate you, Harmon. Good times. And looking forward to going to the Niner Jets game tonight. We'll see how that goes. And looking forward to talking to you every week, man. Ball is back. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a great time to be alive. And yes, you will know by the time you're listening to this how Dalton is feeling on Tuesday morning. But that is going to do it for our show today. On Wednesday, Sal Vetri joins me for the post week one data dump. We tell you the stats you need to know heading into week 2. Until then, we're out.